Hey, resilient recruiters, here's reason number two why you must attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. And that is the keynote presentations. You'll gain exclusive insights from other top billing recruiters and entrepreneurs who've either scaled their own desk or built multi-seven-figure businesses. I myself will, of course, be one of the speakers, but the presentations that I am the most excited about are not professional speakers and trainers, but other recruitment business owners like you who will be unpacking their most effective tactics and strategies. No theory, just practical insights from people who are in the trenches, ordinary people achieving extraordinary results. There's still time to take advantage of the early bird pricing. By the way, it's happening on September 17th and 18th. So don't miss out. Reserve your place now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm delighted to be joined today by James O'Brien. James is the COO of iIntro, and for the last 6 years, he's helped hundreds of recruiting firms transition to a retained recruitment service. Prior to that, James was the managing director of EO Executives, an international executive search and interim management firm. His recruitment career dates back to the 1980s, although he spent much of the last 30 years coaching and training recruiters, as well as being at the coalface of the industry. I've known James personally since 2017. He's such a great guy. He's been extremely generous with me, helping me with my business without any direct benefit to himself. So it's my absolute pleasure to introduce him to you as well. James, welcome. Thanks for being here.
No, welcome, Mark. Thanks for the kind introduction. And, you know, it's been great knowing you over the last 4 or 5 years as well.
Fantastic. And our loyal listeners will remember episode 43 with Plamen Ivanov, your colleague. So if you haven't heard that one, go back and have a listen, because Plamen is such a huge personality and very entertaining as well. So lots of gold nuggets in that one. Hey, James, I want to compliment you on your video content. I've noticed over the last months, and maybe, I don't know, maybe a year or so, you've been putting out really high quality educational content on video and sharing that on LinkedIn. So if you haven't already connected with James on LinkedIn, find him on LinkedIn and look at his activity and the kind of stuff he's posting. We're obviously here to discuss retained recruitment, which is one of my favorite topics, as well as yours. But I wouldn't mind just picking your brains about video content production. Could you tell me a little bit about why you've done that and then like what the benefit has been?
Yeah, well, sure. Appreciate you, flattering me with that. My mum always said I had a great face for radio, so who knew I'd be so popular on video? But there we go.
Let me interrupt you for a second, because that limiting belief, I think, is one of the things that stops people from creating video in the first place. Is that they are uncomfortable on camera, and they don't like to watch themselves on videos, so they assume other people won't want to watch their videos either. How did you get over that?
Well, the other thing is, as well, Mark, is people don't like the sound of their own voice.
Right, true.
And that's one of those things where we listen back, and you probably experienced that as well as I do at some point. And I think it's the point you make is, if you're saying something that is going to be useful to somebody, then people do want to hear. And one of the companies I work with as well, there's one of my colleagues there, and he's very he's quite self-conscious about his accent, but I think that's what actually makes it real as well. You know, this is not us trying to speak in the Queen's English with a very plummy voice or anything silly like that. And I think, you know, what people appreciate is the realness of who you are. Yeah. Same as, and I'm sure you know this well, you know, if you make a mistake, if you hesitate, if you and you are, well, that's normal. That's how we speak, isn't it? So it's not really worrying about that. It's just saying, if I've got a message, if I get the message across, people will value it and they'll appreciate the fact that, okay, a couple of little errors, neither here nor there. And, you know, the fun parts of when you're doing videos as well, Mark, when you do the outtakes and the bloopers, which are always a hoot as well. But sometimes we just leave those in because it goes with the flow. So I think you've got to just take a leap of faith. Think, okay, if my message is valuable and I get it out there, people appreciate it. Don't worry about the haters. There's always a few of them out there, Mark.
Yeah, of course.
The people who'll just have a little knock at you, and they might say, "Well, you know, who wants to listen to a bald, ginger-haired bloke with glasses and a bit of a beard?" Hey, you know, there are people there, but that's not gonna work.
Absolutely, and you know, I've heard it said that if you're not getting any pushback, then you're not taking enough action. You're not putting yourself out there enough.
Yeah.
So, totally agree. Like if you concentrate, I think the self-consciousness you get over by concentrating on the message you want to share, the value you want to deliver, and how you can be a service, how you can help others. And if you put the emphasis on that external focus of like, I just want to help people. I want to, whether it's clients or candidates, I want to share my knowledge, then that can help to get over the self-conscious, you know, ness.
I think so. And if you go back to that part about why do I do it? Mm. You know, I think, yes, you have to be a bit of a giver. You know, I'm a sharer. And, you know, when you work in some of the arenas I work in, part-time training, you know, then you have to like sharing information. But if you have the passion, you're passionate about what it is that you're talking about, then you'll also find that people, well, that will resonate with them as well. So your first question, which I avoided, not deliberately, was to say, well, you know, why did we do it? Well, we live in a very visual world nowadays, you know, and people are either watching video or listening to podcasts, you know, all through our smartphones typically. So, you know, when I walk the dog, Mark, I listen to the podcast. You know, when I'm, you know, got time, I might be scouring YouTube or something on LinkedIn. And it's all about what we've tried various things, short, sharp, you know, things in terms of 20, 30 seconds. They're great if you just want a soundbite, which is normally a tease to get somebody in. The educational messages we look to sort of put out are 3 to 10 minutes. You know, that's the absolute maximum that you can do on those particular pieces. And what we try to do is, you know, and I appreciate what you said as well about trying to educate the market, because, you know, we're not all behind closed doors. At the end of the day, I'm sure we all run our companies for commercial reasons and we do that. But, you know, we like to share. You know, we like to share information because we think, you know, this is our part of our why, if you like. You know, when we share things with people, people want to share things back with us and maybe want to come and talk to us about how we can help them. And, you know, we like helping people. That's why we help them, we like helping them transition from where they're at to where they want to get to.
Absolutely.
So,
love it.
So that's what we're trying to understand.
How long have you been doing the videos for, James?
Over the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, then, you know, what we did is we came up, you know, this is obviously we had no idea about COVID. You know, we're getting those videos out. We were talking earlier about, you know, being a giver because we like to share information in the hope that people will come back to us and see if we can help them. And so videos were just the medium. Now, you met Plarman. I think he said he was in episode 43. And I say that is well worth a listen. You might need to turn the volume down a little because he's sometimes very loud. And Plarman and I, we were trying to do them. And, you know, sometimes you get trying to get spar. And, you know, we were having some good sparring, which makes for some good video sometime. But then sometimes the messages have to be more, they just have to be delivered in a very structured way sometimes. So we do two types of video. We do pre-prepared ones, where we're sitting. We really specifically want to get a message over, an educational type message. But underneath, let's be honest, there's probably a sales message in there as well. And then we've done, we start to think about, well, as we launched the Retained Recruiter Academy, which is our learning platform to help people sort of, you know, go through that journey. We said, well, let's give out some of that material. We're happy to train people in the classroom or virtual classrooms nowadays, of course. How can we share, get that information out? So we've also done, we do a lot of videos where, again, same as you, Mark, when you're coaching people, you don't necessarily know what you're going to say until you start saying it, depending on where the topic goes. So we've done some of those. And I think, again, some of the feedback we've had from those has been really positive in the sense of people said, well, listen, it was real, rather than scripted. From that.
Exactly.
I think that's good. So I think, yeah, when you go back to earlier saying, you know, how people sometimes get self-conscious, sometimes, yeah, the scripted ones are probably the hardest ones to do. Yeah, because, oh, sure, it's just reading a script. Well, that can be difficult because, you know, unless you've got a really great memory, and I have a lot of admiration for actors who just read, you know, can remember lines, you're going to be seen on screen going like this, or you're watching people's eyes go. And so you're better, going back to what we said, if you're going to record some videos, record something you're passionate about. And actually, you know, it'll come from the heart. And we talk about this as the flow comes from within you. You can just talk about it. Yeah, you're going to be talking to me about things today, Mark. And yeah, they're not going to be scripted. Even if you've got a few notes down a piece of paper, you're going to be talking about things, you're going to be sharing ideas, but they're going to come from within. And that's what makes videos authentic. People can see that you're real. And I think that's really important to get that across. So we brought out these videos to help audiences, you know, go on the journey that we've been on ourselves, and we like to share with other people to help them go out there, make more money, charge better fees, you know, defend their position with their clients, you know, learn how to add real value, not just say we add value. So that's what our messaging is about, to help people go out there and make that change, really.
100% agree. Well, very well said. Yeah, I think video is a powerful medium for getting the attention of your target audience, building rapport so they start to know, like, and trust you, showcasing your knowledge and your expertise. And as you say, like, sharing and adding value, which induces the law of reciprocity. People, like, get to know you and they appreciate the information that you've put out. And then they're naturally going to be inclined to want to do business with you. And, you know, it's something that we really promote within our coaching group is getting people to step into the spotlight a little bit and to share their knowledge on LinkedIn as a way of building a following and generating inbound, you know, leads from clients and candidates. And it's very, very effective for that. So
I think, Mark, as well, I think what's sometimes part of the fear is that people think, oh, what equipment do I need? Yeah, well, it's in your pocket. You know, the quality of phones, whether it's an iPhone or a Samsung, the quality of those is fantastic nowadays. And yeah, you might want to invest in a little tripod to just keep it steady rather than trying to hold it with your hand and sometimes get a bit of shake. But the quality, the audio quality is fantastic, and, you know, and there's editing tools on it. So, you know, yeah, of course, if you're going to do a lot of it, invest in a microphone. You might want to invest in a better camera and a little studio or of some type. But for most people, you know, they actually, again, go back to that word authentic. They like the authenticity of seeing, okay, what's behind me? Well, this is a room in my house. This is my home office. What's behind you? Yeah, they like seeing those type of things. But again, sometimes you can structure it. You can put a green screen, or, you know, if we use Zoom, you get the virtual backgrounds now, which make you look like you're in somewhere you're probably not. But I think you know, again, just going back to that, just get started. The hardest part is jumping in the water.
Yes.
What we always like to say to people is, lovely and warm if you just jump in.
100%. And that idea of equipment is another excuse that stops people from getting started and just jumping in. I have to put my hands up and say, I've been doing video for a long time, but I've not been super consistent. For me, the podcast is the consistent thing that I'm putting out there. But my colleague Leanne, if you check her out on LinkedIn, Leanne Sarah Jones Hunt, and look at her activity and posts on LinkedIn, you'll see a lot more consistent videos. So this is a case of the student becoming the teacher. Now she's the guru, video guru in our group, and I'm, you know, I'm asking her. So I did a poll on LinkedIn recently to find out what fee percentage recruiters charge, and it confirmed what I'd learned from speaking with so many recruiters every day. The majority of recruiters are undervaluing their service and cutting their fees to become more competitive. Listen, if you want to protect your cash flow and build reserves to protect your business against whatever might happen in the future, you need to be earning more for each placement, not less. The challenge, of course, is how to increase your fees and still be competitive. iIntro has helped hundreds of recruiters to make small but critical adjustments to the way they pitch and win business so they can win more clients who are also willing to pay higher fees. For example, one of their clients typically earned £5,000 per placement, but just a few weeks after working with iIntro, she won a new piece of business on a retainer. So in other words, she got a deposit and her fee was an incredible £20,000, four times her average. If you'd like to see how iIntro can help you to grow your recruitment business and increase your average fees, just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retained and book a free consultation. There's no obligation. And if you mention that you're a listener of the Resilient Recruiter podcast, iIntro have pledged to offer you a 25% discount off any of their services. Just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retained to get started. James, how did you come to get into this whole field of rec tech and you know, retained recruiting as opposed to contingency? Why is this important to you in your journey?
Well, I'm going to take you back to 2012, if that's okay. So I'll try and sort of, you know, preface the story. But I was running, as you mentioned, I was the MD and COO of EO Executives. Yeah, that was an interim management executive recruitment business. I'm choosing my words carefully here, Mark. And we were doing what I now refer to and or now learned is that the word for that is containers. So we were charging clients a small upfront fee, Mark, you know, £1,500. And we were competing against Retain Search by saying, why would you pay all that money to deliver, you know, pay two thirds of the fee before you've seen anybody? You know, we could all argue against it. And I was looking at our process, our service. Now, you know, I had a network of 50 people, you know, in 20 odd offices, 30 offices around the world. You know, that's probably a bit, you know, more around Europe, a little bit of Africa. And I just felt that our service was under par, you know, and I was saying when we, you know, and when we were training new recruits into the organization, new partners into the organization, we had a really fantastic process for interim management, you know, and we could see what it did. And then people said, well, how do you do executive recruitment, executive search? And we said, well, just say, you know, we've got 20 years experience and I know the industry inside out. I know all the kind. That's not good enough. That's not selling it. If I was putting myself in the seat of an employer, a prospect, then why would I buy from me? And I was finding it very hard to answer why I would do that. So I was looking for something. Now, you know, the rec tech has exploded over recent years, Mark, but it's been around for a while. And I attended a recruitment business owner event. And I met, you know, there was a speaker there who was up at the front talking about a piece of rec tech that he'd developed and invented and created that would help that journey to deliver better quality, higher fee earning, retained recruitment work. And that pricked my ears up because, you know, we saw ourselves as being, wanted to be in the executive search field, not necessarily the tier one, but, you know, we wanted to climb the ladder. And it was this big Bulgarian guy sat at the front of this room. And I'm thinking, what can a guy from Bulgaria who's actually talking with a bit of a Bulgarian Yorkshire accent, because at that stage he'd been in Yorkshire for 25 years, what can he do? But he was actually sort of sharing a concept that he'd developed, a technology concept that he'd created for his own recruitment business up in Leeds, and was prepared to share it, you know, going back to that sharing mentality. To cut a long story short, when that software became available, which was another 12 months, by the way, I was there right at the front of the queue saying, I want that. I want to change the way I do business. I want to sort of, you know, give our clients a better experience. I want to give our candidates a better experience. I want to give our partners, our staff, our consultants, our team, I want to give them a better experience and have the ability to do a better job, full stop. So in 2013, we in my old company became iIntro clients. And that was my first touch point. Yeah, of course we had CRMs and things like that, but this is my first touch point with something that was not, you know, average or standard out there in the marketplace. And that helped me. We then started that journey, you know, out there. And what iIntro was back then, it was a software company. You know, we basically bought software off them. And if I wasn't the type of person I was and others like me, then it probably would have, you know, withered on the vine from my perspective, because software is just software. You know, it's an enabler to do something different. What we were looking for, Mark, was the training, the coaching, the understanding that actually to go out there to start to deliver a retained recruitment service, which was our objective, we want to be executive search, we had to understand that there's a process behind that. And the process wasn't just say, hi, I'm a recruiter and I work on retained, you know, retained assignments only. Well, why? What's the benefit to the client? So we deconstructed iIntro from a training perspective and then put it into our business. And it changed the way we do it. Now, EO Executives, today they're still out there, you know. They, you know, that's my former company, but they're still a client. It'll be year 9 this year, so I know that that platform worked. Now, for my own reasons, in the middle of 2015, I left that business, and you know, having built up a really good relationship with Plarman and his business partner at the time, Paul Hickey. Sorry, say business partner at the time. If Paul's listening, Paul's still his business partner.
Paul's still there. Shout out to Paul.
Yeah, he's still there, Paul. Yeah. I'm just sort of sorry, I'm muscled in on it, so I feel like I'm there. So yeah, at the time, I just feel like it's three of us now rather than two at the time. Yeah, they were based in Leeds, and I live in York. And so yeah, I'd had a good relationship. Said, listen, you know, thanks. Yeah, I've enjoyed the last couple of years getting to know you guys, but I'm off to do something different. I said, what? I said, well, you know, when you're looking at changing, you don't, or you sometimes have your finger in a few pies. I said, well, I'm looking at things. I said, well, listen, let's have lunch. So I met Plamen and Paul, had lunch. We spoke things through. To cut a long story short, I joined the company.
Oh, fantastic.
And that was how I got involved in it. The last 6 years have been, you know, flown by. You know, something called COVID that happened, but yeah, that's actually good for our industry generally and our business. So, yeah, that was my love affair with RecTech started then. And then what I've really enjoyed is working with literally hundreds of recruitment companies, helping them go through the journey that I went through. It's not right for every company, though, Mark. I'm sure you know this. You know, I'm not here saying retained recruitment is the only way you should deliver service. But I am somebody who says retained recruitment is, and again, retained recruitment, not executive search, retained recruitment is not just for the executive search assignments. That's something right. That's really important. It's a service method, not just for the, you know, for the people right end of the top end of the market.
Right, absolutely. I am evangelical about the retain model. And just from my own experience as a recruiter, I found a contingency so frustrating because you can do everything right and still have the rug pulled out from underneath you, you know, and often even if the client is well-intentioned, which they're not always, but even if they don't want this to happen, like they get acquired and then the whole, like you've invented hours or weeks or months on an assignment, and then you're about to close the offer and they say, oh, Mark, we can't go forward actually because this and this has happened, or they move the goalposts. We know all the things that happened. And I just felt that was hugely unfair that you've wasted all of this time, blood, sweat, and tears, and you literally are empty-handed at the end of that. And we know that on average, contingency recruitment has a 20% success rate or conversion rate, which means that in a 5 day week, you're working 4 days for free in a contingency, you know, if you're purely doing contingency. So, you know, I'm completely in agreement with you.
I think the challenge with that, Mark, though, one of the challenges with that 80-20, which I agree with totally, mine was worse than that. But yeah, I think it's a really nice analogy. But people say, well, yeah, but that 1 day pay or pay, you know, it is worth it. And the bit we try to say on the retain side is, well, just turn that round. You know, we're not saying that you go from 20 to 100% efficiency, because that's probably unrealistic because of other things. But if you can go from 20 to 60, then that means you could treble your income. Now, again, that might not be straight rationing, but it's about saying that you don't think about, well, 1 day is good enough. Actually, you've worked really hard on the other 4 days, but if you could get paid for another two of those 4 days, that could treble your income. Now, again, people say, oh, there he goes, you're going to treble your income. Yeah, I'm just saying you're going to get more income, yeah? You're going to work smarter. You're going to be actually enjoying the experience with clients and candidates, and they're going to appreciate it much more as well. So I think there's that. It's not about trying to say, oh, you're going to be 100% efficient and get paid for every single day of your time, because, you know, there's downtime, there's admin time, which, yeah, no one's going to pay you for that type of things that you have to do when you're running a business. So I think it's looking at that and saying, how can I become, what can I do to be more productive, to be more efficient? How can I get a return on investment? And yeah, that's when people come to us, Mark, that's what they're looking for. They're looking at the frustration, you know, oh God, you know, and I honestly get it, you know, week in, week out, people saying that story that you just said, Mark, you know, through no fault of their own, they've been left hanging high and dry with, you know, and the client says, oh, I'm really sorry about that, I'll be back to you next time. But does it ever come round? And that's just a question. Well, that's not a great efficient way to work. So people say to us, well, how can I become more efficient? Now, I suppose more importantly, how can I convince a client to actually retain me? That's a skill, Mark. You know that, I know that. You can't just say, hi, I'm James O'Brien, can I have a retainer, please? I mean, you can try it, but it's not going to work.
Well, the funny thing is, James, sometimes it will, right?
And just that's true.
Even having the confidence to, you know, just almost making that decision, okay, I am going to shift to this business model, and making that mental shift in that decision is the first step, right? And you're right, it's not going to stand up to any type of resistance or challenge from the client, but some clients are already happy to work this way and are expecting to work that way.
Mark, I was running we were running a little educational seminar yesterday, actually, and it was interesting. I got a really nice bit of feedback from a lady yesterday who said, I was listening to you and I had a light bulb moment. Remember, this one of these educational things? She wrote a really nice piece, and I'll share it with you in a second, in terms of what she found to be the light bulb moment. And we were just talking about the mindset, which is what's in there. Yeah, hi, my name's James O'Brien. I want to retain the Simon. Yeah, it will get you some way, but obviously it doesn't stand up to scrutiny if people don't probe behind. You've got nothing behind it. You know, I'm confident, yes, as you're confident, there's something behind it. But what I said this, like, you know, what we're saying on this call, what this lady picked up on, was that out there, clients don't appreciate you. Yeah, and you know, I remember, you know, Mark, you said earlier, I've been in recruitment since 1980. I remember getting my first job in 1988, and I got a business card. I remember, you should get paper business cards. And my job title, I've probably got it somewhere, it was recruitment consultant. Right. Whatever happened to the consultant? Because then we all of a sudden we became recruiters. You might have heard me say this before, Mark, go and type into Google recruiters art and see what pops up as the automatic suggestion. Not too pleasant. So there's that perception of what a recruiter is and what they do that the market has, and they have that for a very good reason, and it's because there are charlatans out there who don't give the service that we all want to. But if you hold yourself and if you have your own self-worth and believe that you're worth it, you know, then you should have the confidence to tell your client what it is that you do, and that is that you consult with them. And the phrase we gave is that, you know, don't position yourself as a recruiter, because a recruiter, in real simple terms, is somebody who goes and finds CVs for clients. Yeah, and that works. Don't get me wrong, that works in certain cases. But all you need is put the consultant back in it. So what we said is, you know, consider this. Consider you're going to be promoted. You're going to promote yourself today, and you're going to say to your clients, you know, what am I? I'm a management consultant who specialises in talent acquisition for the XYZ sector, and I work with companies like yours. Now, what does that mean? Well, actually, I'm going to identify what it is that you're looking for. I'm not just going to find your CVs, because my job isn't just to find CVs. You might think it's for me to find CVs, but that's what a recruiter does. They dip into a database, pull out a few CVs, and they'll do it in a couple of hours, and they'll find you whoever's available. May not be the best person, but it's a person available, and you interview them. And yeah, you go out there and hire them. But what happens if they leave? What's the true measure of a good recruitment exercise? Well, it's whether the person stays for the medium to long term, not forever, but for the medium to long term. So the client, the employer, has actually had a return on their investment in you. So it's where we say to clients, so my job is to find out what's going to make somebody want to stay here for the medium to long term. And just by accepting that you're looking for somebody with 5 years experience, a degree in X, Y, and Z, and has worked for a good company like this, that's not really going to be the answer, because you've done that before and it doesn't work. And so, you know, the various things we do, Mark, to try and help people understand that you've got to undertake a, you know, recruitment process audit with organisations. You've got to find out what their retention rates are with new employees, not all of their employees, but new employees. You know, what process do they have in place to sort of, you know, keep people? You know, they say, well, we interview people 3 times and we offer them gym membership and we offer them a Friday afternoons off or whatever it might be. No, that's not what it's about. There's more to it than that. And so we put in place some simple questions with employers to say, you know, just tell me, of the last 10 people you've hired, how many are still with you 1 year later? And we always get back from clients, you know, when they have a think about it, it's 7 or 8. Maybe it's an 8 or 9, but it's normally 7 or 8. It's around that type of region. So what that says to them is they've got a 70% to 80% success rate. And what's the opposite of success? The opposite of success is failure. So that also means they've got a 20% to 30% failure rate. But being glass half full type of people, we focus on the positive, and therefore people think that's okay because that's the norm. And I remember 20 years ago, I was running a company called Pittman Training Mark. It's a secretarial training business. And I remember asking myself that very same question and patting myself on the back as a former recruiter, saying, well, I get it right 7-8 times out of 10. Can't get it right all the time, can I? And then you say to yourself, as a recruiter now, or as a management consultant specializing in talent acquisition, how many of the last 10 people I've placed, I probably don't measure it, but how many of those are still in the job 1 year later? And most recruiters say to us, Mark, 9 or 10. I say, well, how are you using that value? Because if you get the client to say 7 or 8, and you know yours is 9 or 10, there's a gap. You're already better than them, but how do you get that across to them? How do you put that into a value proposition that says, this is why you should work with me? Why is it 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10? What is it that you do differently that you could share with the client? Not just saying, I know the market. I've got a great, you know, contact book of people who are in your sector. What is it you specifically do? And again, so iIntro, what we try and do is help productize the process. Yeah, recruitment is an intangible. How do we help them productize that so they can show the client Yeah, for those people who are a bit visual, show the client what it is that you do and say, this is what I do for you. Now, if you like this, for me to do that takes a lot of effort. It isn't just about me going over to a little filing cabinet and coming up with three or four CVs or a database or LinkedIn. It's actually me doing the work, the selection, the assessment work. And if you like that, you need to get me to do it for you. So you commit to me and I'll commit to you. And if you don't want to, that's okay, because somebody will do go and find you some CVs, but that's not me. But if you'd like me to find you some people who are going to stay with you medium to long term, give you a great return on investment, and I'll deliver it in a process where you know you've got some guarantee, because we'll also help back it up with a 12-month free replacement mark, or up to 12 months for sure. So we're actually giving the client confidence in our process, and that's why they'll buy a retainer's mark. Yeah, because you give them the confidence that, you know, you're not just talking, you're actually showing them what you do. And yeah, we get clients and they just say, wow. And again, week in, week out, the feedback we get from clients, you know, I mentioned they come to us for a reason. Sometimes they'll say, how much does it cost by your service? Yeah, how am I going to measure my return on investment? And we had this very nice client in the US, probably quarter four last year. And he came on and said, yeah, well, I'm going to give this a go. I want to test out if I can transition over and maybe you can help me. So, you know, we knew that, you know, you'll know this sometimes, Mark, you get the clients who want almost an immediate return. They think there's a light switch, you can just turn it on. And sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. Now, this is a really nice guy. He's a British guy gone out to the US. I think he's probably in his 30s. So a really bright, bright recruiter. And he's working in the startup market. Well, he went through our training program, you know, a bit of coaching to say this is what you do. He took it all in because he was very keen. And then he put it into practice and he jumped in. Going back to what that analogy we said, he jumped in the pool because it's scary. When you pitch for the first time, something that you've never pitched before, you know, you're always, you know, you're trying to say a fee to come out of you and it's stuck in your throat because 33%, and they almost don't believe in themselves. And this guy, his name's Greg, he pitched at the 33%. It was on $250,000 roll mark, $80,000 of fees.
I know Greg, actually. In fact, I'm pretty sure he heard about iIntro on this podcast.
Oh, you might well be right.
And is he in California?
He certainly is. And
such a great guy.
Hey, I spoke to him. I spoke to him last week and he's done it again. And he's got another 8 roles coming from these two client organizations. So, yeah, he's a great success story for a fast ROI. Now, it's not always like that. Sometimes it's a bit of a slower burn. But, you know, it's all about getting people out there. And one of my favorite stories is, you know, another one of our clients who, yeah, and some people make this, they make this mental shift. I said to you back in 2012, 2013, I wanted a shift. Not many people are prepared to do that. Yeah. But we've got a couple that we work with, you may know them. They're called Esther and Jared, and they took the decision to stop working where they, in the market they were in, and just finish and then start again. And move to, you know, an overnight. Now, again, it wasn't overnight. It took a bit of time because you're leaving behind all your relationships that she'd built up over 20 years to go and start in a new market in a new sector. But they persevered. And again, they've gone out there and, you know, again, are in the, you know, I haven't spoken to them this year. Don't know when this bit people listen to this, but it's early part of the year. But, you know, at the back end of last year, They were on for, I think it was a good 300,000 of retained fee income from almost a startup in 2020. Let's call it that one. So people can get that if they're prepared to put in the effort. And it's through working with people like you, Mark, as well as ourselves, people getting the right coaching and support to say that, you know, there are people like us who will help. We will give you what you need to get out there and give you the confidence to believe in yourself. And once you have that, it's something you never look back, you know. If you know, I love talking to employers. So part of the service we offer to our clients, we call it pitch like a pro. So we will pitch with them if they want. Sometimes it's hard to get over. So we'll help them go through those first pitches. I remember another one, Mark. You talk about California. One of our clients in the US said, "Can you come on a call with me, James, and help me just close this one?" Sure. So you know, it's on a Friday. No problem. 2:30. He was in Philadelphia. No problem. Yeah, in the UK, yeah, 2:30 is 7:30 in the evening. He didn't tell me it was actually 2:30 in California. His client was West Coast, so like 10:30 on a Friday night. And I'd already arranged to go out for someone, but I didn't go out. I actually sort of stayed and made the call. And And obviously we closed that business, which was good. But you talk to employers, and we watched them, and I then carried on that campaign or assignment that we worked with them, and watched their eyes change as we went through what we call the reveal process, when we reveal the shortlist, the information, the rich information we give them. This was a billion-dollar company, by the way. They'd never seen anything like this. So a billion-dollar company has recruited a lot of people, and they'd never seen anything delivered in the way that we delivered. So it's fascinating watching it from both sides, from the recruiter side, from the employer side, to help people get through there. But
Wow, that was a torrent of information, James. But beautiful little masterclass on how to pitch and win retained search. You did like a 5 or 10 minute, like asking the right questions and then explaining the value and demonstrating or showing how you were going to deliver the ROI, and then asking for the order. So
sorry, Mark, I probably got on my soapbox there.
No, that was brilliant, because that's what I was looking for from you, was really concrete, actionable insights that people can implement straight away. And I love the questioning, by the way, about asking, in the last year, how many people have you hired and how many of them are still with you a year later? And realizing that gap, that was it. That's a huge light bulb moment, I think, for a lot of listeners, is realizing, well, if 9 or 10 out of 10 people that you've placed in the last year are still there, but clients, are only managing 7 or 8 of them, then how much is that worth? Like, what's the impact of that to the organization? What's the cost savings in terms of, having that staff turnover? And instead of focusing on justifying your fee or arguing like, well, other companies are only charging us 15% and getting into that nonsense, it's really completely reframing the value that you're bringing to their whole recruitment process. And the ROI, you put it in terms of ROI to the business. And if we start positioning ourselves that way, rather than we're competing with other contingent firms at, 10, 15, 18%, then, that could transform the way people pitch and win business.
I was going to say, one of the things that we do, and I touched on these words earlier, we undertake with employers, undertake something called a recruitment process audit, because most things revolve around time, people and money. Yeah. So we work with clients, say, listen, there's three promises I can give you. We're going to help you reduce your commercial downtime. That's the amount of time you're currently wasting interviewing and hiring the wrong people. Yeah, because it's a huge time killer. Well, your people, we're going to help you improve the productivity of your people. We're going to improve your new employee retention rates. So when we go through that questioning technique, 7 or 8 out of 10, well, actually, our success rates, and we track these, are 96%. So we're going to help you improve that. And that's going to have a consequential impact on your business, because when you've got a team that's not churning as much, and for all of you people who like sports analogies, if you've got all your players on the pitch most of the time, then you're just going to perform better because you get in sync with each other. But if the team's constantly chopping and changing, then the performance starts to dip and not really move about. So we can help you improve the performance of your people. And number three, we're going to help you, the critical one for a lot of organizations, and the words we use, we reduce your overall cost to hire. And what does that mean? That doesn't mean, I didn't say I reduce my fee. So we're going to reduce your overall cost to hire. So we help them understand how much their current process is costing them, how much their current recruitment process. And we've got a really nifty tool, Mark. It's on our website. It's called a bad hire calculator. And clients can just input 5 pieces of data. How many people did they hire last year? How many are still with them? How long did they last in months? How much did you pay them on average? And how much did you pay recruiters? And we then do this analysis that says, okay, this is how much it's costing you, based on not numbers we've made up, by the way, based on a piece of research done by, in the UK, the Recruitment Employment Confederation. It's a few years old now, but there's nothing more recent than that. And it shows the cost. And just in real headline numbers, Mark, just for people to be aware of this, and there are other, I think the CIPD also do something, is roughly, you're talking 3 to 3.5 times salary. So if you're talking to a client who keeps on losing people at 50K basic salary, every time they lose someone, it's cost them 150,000. And this, what we're able to do is evidence that for them and say, listen, if you improve that, we can't necessarily save it all, but we can save you vast proportions of it. Because if you're losing 3 people out of 10, and we can help you lose, less than one, less than half of a person, then there's got to be a consequential impact. And that's where you show them you've added value. And then your fee melts into the distance. So whether you're charging 33%, 25%, 20%, and the market's charging 15%, doesn't matter. Your fee now is inconsequential because you're offering.
James, by the way, I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a minute. I love the bad hire calculator concept. My question is, how many clients are either A, know the data points, or B, are willing to tell you those numbers?
Well, yeah, that's a really good point, Mark, because the calculator, the questions we put in the calculator, if people are doing it by themselves, says, how many people did you employ in the previous year? Yeah. Okay. So here we sit in February 2022. So our calculators say, how many people did you employ between March 20 and February 21? And the second question is, how many of those people are still with you? Now, no idea. Which is why I gave you the question, Mark, earlier, which is to overcome this one, which is, of the last 10 people you've hired, so forget the timeline.
Ah, that's better.
And so we say, right, let's pop in the 10 you said. Now, of those 10 people, how many are still with you? 7 or 8. Great, fantastic. Now, I want to give you one other little nugget, Mark, for that question. Because if people like that question, if they're listening in, it really is a good question, particularly if you know what your stats are, as we do. But when you get people saying, last 10, they say, yeah, okay. Well, does that mean that 20 to 30% of your people leave? And the answer has to be yes. That's what you said. So does that mean that your current recruitment process has got a 20 to 30% failure rate? Quite a hard thing to say to somebody because you're trying to make friends in a prospect meeting. So, but then you just, remember, we're management consultants now. So sometimes we've got to give the bad news before, we've got to make them feel a little bit of pain before we give them the solution. But here's a great question. Here's our killer question. Freebie for you.
Go for it.
The killer question is to say to the prospect, is there any other process in your business where you would accept a failure rate of 20 to 30% and leave it alone? That's normally a light bulb moment for most people to say, well, no, of course not. Well, why do you do it with people? Because it says on your website, people are our greatest asset, but you just churn 20 to 30% and don't think about it.
Absolutely.
Why is that? So then you say, okay, so surely there's some room for improvement. And the answer is yes. So it just helps the conversation go along. Now, the other thing we'll say to people, Mark, is, let's be clear on this one. Most recruiters don't have enough client meetings. So when you do get one, it's gold dust. But the only reason a client is meeting you is because they're implicitly telling you or tacitly telling you that actually I've got a problem. I'm not telling you what it is yet, but there's no reason anybody wakes up today as an employer says, you know what, I'd love to see a recruiter today. Let me get that guy, right. James O'Brien, in. Just chew the fat. No, they don't. They invite you in because they're not happy with their current provider or they're not happy with something. If they were happy, you wouldn't get a look in. So something you've done or said in your marketing, in your pre-sales to get in front of that client is there. So don't waste the opportunity when you're with them. Don't waste that golden chance to go in there and close for business. And most people, they just focus on saying, they ask about the job. No, ask about why they're hiring. Ask about their current recruitment process. What is going wrong? What do they like? What don't they like? What are the consequences? Yeah. And for anybody who's done any basic sales training, spin selling will give you some of that sort of background to do that. Poke the problem, identify it, and then actually show them how you're going to fix the solution. And most people appreciate that. And you're saying, this is what I can do for you. If you don't want me to do it, that's okay. Because, again, one of the beauties, Mark, when you actually sort of get through to being a retained recruiter, is you only need to work on one or two pieces of work per month. Whereas when I was a contingent recruiter, it's like, how many jobs can I get on? Because I'm only going to fill 10% was my number, Mark, by the way. I'm only going to fill 10% and never mind 20%. So I've got to get 10 jobs on to even have a chance of filling one a month. Here you get one or two. So when a client says, no, I don't want to pay you, I don't want to do that. Well, if you're brave enough, step away. Because you don't need every client. And one of the things we try and train people on is train them on how to pitch. So again, we developed something called the Retained Recruiter Academy because I mentioned earlier that, when I bought iIntro, it was just a software company. Now we're so much more than that, Mark. Obviously we've identified that, people need coaching, training and support. So we've developed the Retained Recruiter Academy to help them through that journey. It's a 4 week to 52 week, 1 month to 12 month program to help people transition because they need help and support. And that's why I recommend people like you, Mark, in terms of, to go through that coaching and seek extra support whilst you're going through that. Because most recruitment firms, and 80% of them in the UK, according to the REC, are less than 10. A lot of them are just single, of course. The you know, 30 odd thousand recruiters. So it's actually quite a lonely life they lead. And, you know, having the support of a coach to help guide you through some of those times and just challenge you to get thinking, no doubt the work that you do, Mark, you know, we're not coaches in the way that you are. We more provide the training and support around our system. But it's pivotal if people want to, you know, make a permanent change to what they do.
It's actually what you guys do and what we do are very complementary, and that is demonstrated by the overlap in clients. Like, I have a lot of clients in my Inner Circle coaching program are iIntro customers, so it's definitely complementary. So the final thing I wanted to wrap up on, which I think is something you guys are brilliant at, is helping people to create a differentiated service offering, which it's amazing to me how I think 98% of recruiters sound the same. And if everyone is saying more or less the same types of things, the client has no basis for really distinguishing one provider from another, apart from price, really, or, you know, who they might like someone's personality better, but really, you know, it's not a real basis for building a recruitment business. So one of my mentors, Romney Ross, had an acid test, which is, well, first he would say, what, you know, why should I, a prospect, choose to do business with you, to partner with you, instead of, you know, any of your other competitors? You know, what do you offer that is better, superior, different? And he would solicit people's answers. And the funny thing is, the answers people come up with are the things that you mentioned at the beginning, like, well, we're specialists, or, well, we've been doing this for X number of years, or, you know, we have the best quality, or we can fill the job more quickly, or we have an excellent database, or, you know, we're very honest and ethical, or, you know, it's these types of statements. And the question you need to ask yourself is, so none of your competitors can claim any of the same things. And then they go, well, I guess they could say it, but for us, it's really true. And, you know, and that's fine. And I believe you, but the challenge is that the client has no basis for knowing that it's true. And then I hear the recruiters will say, but the proof is in the pudding. Once they try our service, then they'll perceive the difference, and they'll recognize that, you know, they are happier with us. And I'm saying, but that's not good enough, because they have to use your service before they can, you know, perceive the difference. We need to have something we can show them up front before, to help them make that buying decision, because otherwise they may, you know, go with the competition, even though you could have genuinely delivered the better value for them. So could you've highlighted a couple of things. One was like a really strong guarantee. The other is the retention over 12 months. What else do you guys do in relation to giving people a really solid differentiator that's tangible, that's unique, that allows them to charge a higher price and win more business?
I think it's what you just said there, Mark, it's sort of taken from our coaching manual as well and training manual, because when we get to new clients together, we ask them, you know, what are your current USPs? And we use that exact word, you know, and I ask them, what is it that makes you unique? And they say, everything that you just said. And then so you obviously challenge that, say, listen, is that really unique? I get it. It's a good point. So please don't stop saying those things, because they are good things. But that's the entry level. Yeah. What's going to make a client? Yeah. And that's what we said. Put yourself in the shoes of a client. Why would I choose you? Why would you choose James over Mark, or Mark over James, or, you know, whoever? Because we all do sound the same. And, you know, unfortunately, if there is no differentiator, it comes down to the one thing that they can differentiate on. Who's going to do it cheapest? And there's always somebody who will do it cheaper than you.
Absolutely.
So, as the world of recruitment, we've actually become our own worst enemies. That's what's driven prices down, because, you know, there's no value in what we do. So what we do at iIntro is we try and help our clients understand, listen, you've got to say those things, but you've got to say more. So the three pivot points I touched on earlier, you know, here's what we're going to help you do. Reduce client commercial downtime. It's what we call a pivot point, Mark. Okay. So what we mean by that is, I can just say that, but so what the heck does that mean? So what does that mean? So we ask client questions, you know. So when we say reduce commercial town time, let me ask you this question, Mr. or Mrs. Client or Mr. Prospect or Mrs. Prospect. Have you ever interviewed somebody and as soon as you met them, you just knew it was going to be a waste of time, but you interviewed them on the strength of their CV? Yes.
Yes.
How did you feel about that? Well, it was a waste of time. Who did you blame? The recruiter. Yeah. They sold me this CV. Okay. So how you didn't feel good about it. So imagine that's not going to happen to you in the future. We're going to help you save time there. My second question, and these are all leading questions, Mark, as you'll know, is have you ever hired somebody who leaves you within the first 12 months? And we may not have done the recruitment process order by this time, of course. And they're going to say, well, yeah, of course. Okay. Now, how did you feel about that? Was it a waste of time? Yeah, absolutely. You know, we felt we got a waste of time. They duped us. They weren't the person we thought they were. They weren't able to perform, whatever it might be. Okay. So we're going to help you eliminate that time. Can't get rid of all of it, but we're going to help you save time because we all know time is money. So that's number one, reduce your commercial downtime. It's a pivot for us to open the conversation. We're opening the conversation because we don't want to sound like every other recruiter. Number two, we're going to help you improve your new employee retention rate. First thing we have to do is help you establish what is your current retention rate. Not your long-term one, because they say, oh, we've had people have been here 35 years. Yeah. And that's where we'll ask the question, the last 10 people, and so on. So, okay, and then we're going to say to them, you know, just so you're aware of this, our retention rates are 96%. 96% of the people that we place are still in the job 1 year later, and 93% are still in the job 2 years later. Yeah. So we're going to give them something to hang on. Okay, that's different. Yeah. Now, you can still argue, but how do I know it's true? Yeah, so you're looking better. And then number three, we're going to help you reduce your overall cost to hire. Oh, you're going to reduce your fee is what they hear. And that's when I said, no, I'm going to help you reduce. We're going to evaluate. We're going to do a recruitment process audit to identify how much money your current recruitment process is costing and how much you're wasting. And I'm going to show you how we can help you reduce that. Would that interest you? So we're opening a conversation to sound different. Yeah, because we are different. And then the client's going to say, okay, and we might take them through the calculator now, Mark, if it's relevant. It's not always relevant. We don't drum it down everybody. And then we go into what we call a demo. Yeah. We're going to demonstrate our process and it's visual. Yeah. We're not just, you know, we're going to say to clients, okay, let me share with you. Yeah. And what we say to clients, I want you to compare what your current process is. And remember, they've just told you. And most clients say that here's our process. Yeah. We have a vacancy. We polish up the job description, push that out to the recruiters. The recruiters go out and find people. They send us a few CVs. We might end up with a handful or a desk of CVs. We then decide who we want to interview. And we go through 2, 3, maybe even 4 interviews sometimes to get people on. And then we offer them a job. So compare that process to what I'm going to show you. Compare what you get from your recruiter with what you'll get from me as your consultant. What your recruiter gives you is a CV. And we then take them through the iIntro platform. And we say, this is how you do it. It's obviously RecTech nowadays, so it's all online. It's software as a service, of course, so it's all online for people to see. We say, you can log in from anywhere. When we reveal your shortlist to you, which is the reveal when we've actually got everybody ready, and the phrase we use is we utilize multiple layers of scientific and objective assessment to help clients make more informed hiring decisions. That's what we're going to do. We're going to give them more information before they interview. And this is to make sure they don't interview people just because they've got a beautiful CV or resume, if you're listening in the US. So from that side of things, we said, no, we're going to give you more information. Yeah, we're going to give you a behavioral assessment based on what your needs are and whether this person fits them. We can look at video introduction. We can look at key competency assessment. We can look at video assessment. We can look at, you know, all, you know, analytics nowadays in terms of when people, you know, the way I'm moving around, you know, it means things. You know, we can actually help with all that information and we present it to you online. So you can review when it's convenient. And then we're going to talk them through, you know, what we provide for the candidates, because candidate experience is really important, because candidates are just contacts or clients in disguise, Mark.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I hate the way candidates are treated in recruitment, but actually we treat them as human beings, not commodities. And so their engagement in our process means they have to do some work, a bit more than just sending in their CV, but we get them involved in that so they experience that. And then when you show the client, this is the rich information we're going to give you. Now, you can carry on with your 15% CV-based supply service, which fails 30% of the time, or you can come on this journey with us, a much richer journey. It's not going to sort of take any more time in reality when we actually explain what the time profiles are. Yeah, we're going to improve your productivity of your team because these people will stay with you longer. We'll prove that to you. And we're going to reduce your overall cost to hire. And we do it in two ways. We've evaluated what the total cost is. And although our fee is higher, and we obviously have the objection of, hey, why I'm not going to pay 25% when I'm paying 15%, we do realize you're paying 15% twice. Because when you lose somebody after 3 months,
right?
Yeah, most recruit, yeah, lose somebody after 6 months. Sorry, most recruiters have got a 90-day rebate period. After 6 months, it's you're on your own. Well, we'll offer you that, as we said, that industry-leading guarantee of up to 12 months free replacement. We'll do the work for you again. Guess what? We don't want to do the work again. We prefer to do it right first time. But we'll do that if something goes wrong. And 4% of the time, Mark, which is 1 in 25, something does happen beyond everyone's control, and we have to go through the work again. But you know what that makes us with the client? Trustworthy. They can come back to us and we do the work again. So you know what? When they've got a new vacancy, who are they going to go to? They're going to come back. So it's all about making ourselves sticky. So we help our clients. Yeah. And any more in your inner circle, Mark, who want to come and join us and have a chat with us, we'd love to have a chat with them. They just need to click on a link somewhere around here and no doubt they'll find us. But if they come, we'll show them what we do. And that's the way that we demonstrate the platform for the majority of prospects, client potentials, yeah, who are very visual. It shows them why you're different. And that's at the end of the pitch we've done with them, and we'll take them through a close and we'll tell them why they should retain us, and we'll tell them how much they should pay and why they'll pay it. But actually we find most prospects who are going through that say, they don't query paying 25%. People listening say, yeah, they do. Well, they do if you're just selling a CV service. But actually when they go through it, we ask them, how does this compare to what you're currently getting? And it's chalk and cheese. And you know,
James, this has been awesome. By the way, we will share the link to the if people want to book a demo, we'll share that in the show notes. But what I would say is thank you for being so generous with your knowledge. And whether or not people go with iIntro, you've given so many valuable phrases, tips, key questions to ask, and really just the framework for how you structure that conversation around retained assignments. So thank you so much. I we could talk all day. Out of time for now, but it's been awesome catching up with you, James. Thanks a lot for being here.
Yeah, I'll see you on the other side.